One thing about me is that I'm mortal, like I'm an organism, which is weird on its own. Like I'm a collection of literal atoms that decided to hang out together for a while and which will eventually be unable to hang out together any longer. And then I will, this is the weirdest part, cease to be. And there's nothing that can be done about that because, like, planets and stars also cease to be. It's a real conundrum, and I'm not going to find my way through it in this advertisement. But we can make life less terrible for those who survive us, and that's why there's life insurance. I have life insurance because the people who are counting on me will be supported after my atoms can no longer hold it together, and Policy Genius is here to make life insurance easier. Policy Genius isn't an insurance company, it's a marketplace where buying insurance is straightforward and affordable. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams, so check life insurance off your to-do list in no time with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com.
Hello and welcome to Dear Hank and John.
Yours, I prefer to think of it, Dear John and Hank, live and in person.
It's a podcast where two brothers answer your questions, give you devious advice, and bring you all the week's news from both Mars and AFC Wimbledon. John.
Yeah.
How do you...
My father-in-law had a great dad joke.
Well, yeah.
He had a really good dad joke at Thanksgiving dinner, and I was thinking maybe you could just use that one.
Which one was it?
He said, if you've heard this one before, please hesitate to stop me.
Which I found, one, it's clearly something he says a lot.
Yes.
Which makes it sort of a meta joke, because if you've heard this particular dad joke still.
Right.
And then also, I found it very confusing.
Oh,
and
no.
I was unable to listen to the first part of the story because I was thinking about what the heck that meant.
That's what I love about it. I love it because it's the truth of what people are really thinking when they say, if you've heard this one before,
right.
Stop me, which is, I really want to tell this one.
Yeah.
And my desire...
Well, also, who's going to stop them? No one's going to stop them.
Yeah. So, listen, if we sound a little weird, other than the fact that I have a frog in my throat, and I don't mean that metaphorically, I want you all to envision that. So, listen, if we sound a little weird, it's because Hank and I are in the only space that we could find where we could be alone. And it's a pretty echoey little...
We thought about doing it outside, but it's cold.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would describe where we currently are as a large shed. Its original purpose was as a potting shed for, like, plants.
Mm-hmm.
So I would describe our current location as a shed with a window.
Yeah, it's got a window and it's got all hard walls and floors. It is the opposite of what you want when you're recording.
They tell you to record in a really small space, like a closet that's full of textiles.
Yeah, soft.
We are in a very small space. In that sense, we have succeeded. But there is
it's just too big enough.
Nary a textile to be found.
No, yeah, we'd have to build a little tent around ourselves. This is how they do record radio app. So
yeah, this is...
If it sounds familiar,
we're bringing you that kind of high-quality Radio Lab vibe that you've come to expect from Dear Hank and John.
A lot of people would have to work really hard in their audio software to create the very reverb you're experiencing right now.
Exactly.
The room tones.
When people are, like, trying to convey the vibe of a mid-2000s really low-quality podcast, they have to work so hard in Pro Tools to do what we're just doing naturally.
Yeah, look at us.
We are ahead of the curve. Winners.
Thanksgiving has been lovely, John. Thank you for hosting us in Indianapolis.
Yeah, it's been great.
And I love to watch... Mostly it's just seeing... The cousins. Be cousins.
What?
So great.
What was... We had a lovely Thanksgiving. There was absolutely no drama at the Thanksgiving dinner table. Conversation was easy and fun. But I always think about Thanksgiving's past, where it hasn't always been the case. Do you have any memories of childhood stressful Thanksgivings?
Oh, probably. But I don't connect them to the holiday, though.
Oh, I have like Thanksgiving dinner stress memories, because when we were kids, we'd always have to go around the room and say what we were thankful for. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Dad's dad, our grandpa, would always like say that he was thankful for something that was a little bit that he wasn't thankful for, you know? That was like the passive aggressive version of gratitude, where he would be like, well, I'm thankful for my health, what I have of it.
Yeah. And I'm thankful for this son, and I won't mention the other one.
Yeah, that kind of vibe.
Yeah.
I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings who might be listening.
Well, he is not.
You don't know that, Hank.
That's true.
One of my big fears is that they have podcasts in the afterlife, but it's only the podcasts we're making, you know?
Right.
Like, wouldn't that be terrible? You get to heaven and, like, everything's good except for the only media that's available is Dear Hank and John.
Well, yeah, they do it that way intentionally so that you don't, like, spend all your time consuming content.
They got, like, 5 episodes of
Gotta
Delete This.
Gotta go skiing.
They got the worst Anthropocene reviewed, and then the rest of it's just the entire library of Dear Hank and John. That's all you got.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh, God, I miss the McElroys. We just had a nice few minutes of using croquet mallets to destroy ice.
Yeah, destroy the upper surface of a pond.
That was I felt like the kids could have done that for hours if we let
them. Yeah, we might have lost some fingers.
I was very cold.
And Oren looked like he was going to go in at any moment.
He does not have the edge of pond balance that one really needs to be smashing ice with a croquet mallet.
And then leaning over to grab the pieces out of it. And I'm like, wow, Catherine's going to be really mad at me when I rush in with this boy with his blue legs.
Henry was really funny about it, because Henry was like, you know, I was about that age when I fell into this pond while hitting ice with a croquet mallet. And let me tell you, it was cold.
Yeah, I was always in like the mental scenario planning. Like, if he fell in now, what would I do?
Yeah.
If he fell in now, what would I do?
I mean, to be clear, the pond is a foot deep.
Yeah.
And it was going
to
be fine.
We were close enough to warmth.
Yeah.
It would have been fine.
It would have been a
father failure.
Yeah. You don't want to be in that situation.
No.
But at the same time, you do want to destroy ice with a croquet mallet, and that is the great dilemma of being a dad.
Uh-huh.
All right, Hank, let's answer some questions from our listeners, beginning with this one from Justin, who writes, Dear John and Hank, I have been stuck inside of a Marshalls for 40 minutes.
Oh, you've come to the right place.
Yeah.
If you want to talk to somebody who knows what it's like to be stuck inside of a box store for a long time.
Yeah. Hank Green is the expert.
I have that expertise.
I also have seen that one movie where the guy gets stuck in Target for a night and he falls in love.
Oh, sure. With Natalie Portman? Or is that a separate movie about a person who gets stuck inside of a box store?
That's all I remember about the plot. I don't remember any of the characters. I feel like it's a problematic movie, but I can't remember why. You know, kind of thing.
Google Auto filled it for me.
No. This one is a stuck in Target movie. I remember vividly that it's a Target.
This is weird that this is such a common theme in media. It's called Where the Heart Is.
No. That's not what I'm thinking about. This one is called Career Opportunities.
I think they got different vibes.
It was written by John Hughes.
Oh, wow.
And it had Jennifer, what's her face in it? Connelly. From A Beautiful Mind.
That's what you think of for Jennifer Connelly.
Didn't she win an Oscar for that film?
I don't know.
I believe she did. So that's why I think of her, because she won an Oscar. I'm looking to see if she won an Oscar. Awards and nominations.
Most known for Labyrinth. That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah.
She's not in this movie, John.
She is in the movie Career Opportunities.
Well, it's not in her top 9.
Well, of course it's not. The movie is called Career Opportunities. I'm the only person who's seen it.
Oh, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the other movie. The movie that you think she won an Oscar for.
A Beautiful Mind that she did win an Oscar for, by the way.
Oh, you're right. That's her fourth.
She won an Oscar, okay? Anyway.
But she's also in Snowpiercer.
None of this is relevant to the Career Opportunities discussion I'm hoping to have.
Okay.
All right. Here's the movie, Hank. As I remember it, I'm going to try to pitch it to you, having remembered now the fact that they're in a Target and what the title is, but nothing else.
Yeah.
All right. So there's this guy, and I think he's like working in Target, and he's the night cleanup boy. And then this girl is like stuck inside of Target. She like ends up there somehow. They close the store without her noticing. And she's sort of like spoiled and crappy. And then
they find out
that deep down they're kind of the same person.
Why doesn't he just let her out?
And then I think they run away to California because she has like $100,000 on her.
Oh.
Yeah. And then I don't remember how it ends, but it ends. They end up happily ever after. Mm. And there's some corruption involved. Maybe her dad is the mayor and he's a bad... I don't remember.
Where the heart is, Natalie Portman isn't stuck in the Walmart. She just figures out how to live in the Walmart.
Oh, okay.
After being abandoned by her boyfriend when she's 17 years old and pregnant in Oklahoma.
Oh, wow.
Secretly moves into the store. Eventually, this attracts media attention with the help of her friends. She makes a new life for herself in the town. Everybody sort of is like, you know, we actually think you're pretty great, Natalie Portman.
Wow. So is it good?
Look, I am so unaccustomed to media these days. This is what I learned during Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Anything gets me. I haven't watched a full movie in 4 or 5 years. So just reading that synopsis made me like start to choke up. I want the commercials during the Macy's Day Parade. I cried 4 times.
Okay, some more facts about career opportunities. Hank, real quick, it's 83 minutes long. This movie is apparently not as good as I remember. John Hughes, who wrote the film, called it a huge disappointment, and part of the reason that he kind of like left Hollywood and abandoned it all to go to a reforestation project in his native Illinois.
Yeah.
And said, suddenly I'm a commodity. If Home Alone hadn't come out, my name wouldn't be on Career Opportunities 4 times. So it was sort of the thing that caused him to Salinger.
Wow.
And the director himself, the director himself did not seem to like the movie very much. The only person who really is a huge fan of it is 11-year-old me.
Right.
All right. So there we go. That is not the answer to the question. That was only the first. It wasn't even a full independent clause into the question.
I've never seen this before.
Okay.
The Wikipedia page for Where the Heart Is.
Yeah.
Includes a section called Differences Between Novel and Film.
Oh, wow. I wish that. Man,
comprehensive.
How I wish that section were in every Wikipedia article about a novel adapted into a film. Well, I find that I am often blamed for things people will be like, oh, I hate John Green books, like this one thing that happened. And I'm like, that didn't happen in a John Green book. That happened in a movie I didn't write.
You'll survive.
I will. That's a great point, Hank. Thank you. I'm grateful for my health, what I have of it.
In the novel, Mary Elizabeth Hull dies in a fire at the library. In the film, she succumbs to the complications of her alcoholism. It's a pretty big difference.
Whoa, 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 whoa. I thought that this was a lighthearted film about a girl who gets stuck in a Walmart.
I think that's her, like, mom that she... I don't know.
All right. Let's move on, Hank. Can we...
Stuck in a Marshalls.
Justin is stuck in a Marshalls.
Stuck in a Marshalls with you.
And one of our big ambitions for Justin is that he not die either in a fire or from complications of alcoholism related to being stuck in a Marshalls. I have been paralyzed by the selection of luggage. That is the question.
Wait. I think I misunderstood the way in which you are stuck in a Marshalls, but okay.
I need advice.
Yeah.
Hard or soft side luggage? I even at the right store?
I thought you were actually stuck in a Marshalls. You're not actually stuck in a Marshalls. You're just confused by luggage.
Should it be expensive, cheap, or somewhere in the middle? Please help. The staff is starting to look at me like I'm being irrational. Pumpkins and penguins,
well, this
Justin.
This is not your fault, Justin. This is society's fault.
It is.
We are all being irrational because we're being posed with too many choices.
Especially around luggage. Here's the thing, Justin, and I find this with jeans, I find it with a lot of things. Either you get something that is really good that you know is going to be good, mm-hmm. or you get something that's cheap that might be just as good as the good thing. So yeah. Let me give you an example in terms of luggage. One time, I flew to New Orleans, and I thought that my luggage was flying with me, but it turned out that my luggage was flying to a place that I was never going to find it again.
Mm.
And as a result, the nice folks at Delta, hashtag not spawn, but want spawn, that's the full hashtag. The nice folks at Delta were like, we're really sorry we lost your luggage. Here's a large check.
Oh, wow.
For all the stuff that was inside.
They're like, this is not going to be found. This yes. went into the engine of the plane.
Exactly. We are pretty sure that your suitcase was dropped from an airplane at 35,000 feet.
It is now owned by a farmer walrus.
Its contents are spread across the ocean. We apologize. Here's $1,100. And so I went to Target to buy a new mm-hmm. suitcase so that I could fly home from New Orleans. Yeah. And I was like, they're not going to get me this time. Yeah. I'm going to get a very inexpensive suitcase.
Yeah.
So I got a suitcase. For some reason, it's Jeep branded. Like the the car company. It's a Jeep. It's a Jeep. It's a Grand Cherokee. But it's a suitcase. Okay? And I was like, man, I don't have a special loyalty to the Jeep brand.
Well, the thing is, it's not a Jeep.
It's a Jeep. I got a Jeep. And it was only $39. I mean, you want to talk about a good
That's
Jeep.
That's a Jeep Jeep?
Yeah. It's a pretty cheap Jeep. It's a pretty cheap Jeep. So I got this cheap Jeep. And I was like, this is just to get me home from New Orleans. And I no longer even believe that my luggage will come with me.
Yeah.
So I'm packing up this $39 suitcase thinking, this is, probably going to be in the ocean pretty soon.
Yeah.
And I know the date. It was January 30th, 2012. That was the day I bought it because it was right at the end of the Fault in Our Stars tour. And I packed up that Jeep suitcase. It did make it back to Indianapolis. Uh-huh. And it is by far my favorite suitcase all these years later. That cheap Jeep suitcase.
I was just looking at this suitcase. I opened it up. There was a bunch of peeps in it. And I was like, wow, that's a neat cheap Jeep peeps.
Ooh, that was very challenging.
Hopefully Tuna cut out the part where I said it wrong 80 times.
Hank made Tuna cut out all the parts where he said it wrong. But he eventually got to meet cheap Jeep peeps, which is really good.
Thanks.
It was worth the wait.
I had my luggage stolen once.
Yeah.
And I now own a bunch of things that I got at Target.
Yeah.
Because I had to get luggage. And every time I look at them, I think about how much that sucked. And I just...
Oh, so it's like, kind of got a negative vibe for
you. That's one way I've gotten luggage. Here's another one. First, you start in 2007, you become a YouTuber.
Yeah, that's actually how I got my other piece of luggage.
And then eventually, YouTube starts sending you luggage.
Yeah.
Why does YouTube send me luggage?
So YouTube sent me a piece of luggage. It's a nice hardback bag. Nice. I actually like it less than I like my cheap Jeep. But I do like it. Uh-huh. It's nice. I will use the cheap Jeep 9 times out of 10.
Yeah.
But 1 time out of 10, I'll use the YouTube one. The problem with the YouTube one is that they emblazoned my name on the top
John
of it.
Green.
And so Sarah used a piece of black electrical tape to cover my name so that it's not quite so mm-hmm. humiliating.
Yeah.
And now I like it. But I wouldn't use it for the longest time.
Mine has the YouTube logo and it says Hank Green and I use it all the time.
Oh, I like the black electrical tape.
That's how you know it. It's a good look.
That's how you know it's yours.
I know it's mine because it says Hank Green.
Yeah, but I do not want that. So the short answer, Justin, is that we don't know.
Yeah, I'm not an expert on luggage. I'm an expert at being stuck inside of a box store. You came to the wrong podcast.
All right,
John, this next question comes from Brendan, who asks, Dear Hank and John, in my 20 years of life, I have found that I am easily distracted by things, and as such, I will often forget to do other things. I have found that setting reminders on my phone can be helpful, but then I am looking at my phone, which tempts me to do more distracting, time-wasting things. How do I remind myself to do the things that I need to do without using my phone? Brain cells and brevity, Brendan.
Well, I'm sorry. I was on my phone. I got to tell you the truth. What was the question?
He wasn't. I'm here with him, and I know that that was a lie.
Oh, man. You got to, Hank, you got to let me have some movie magic now and again, okay?
Let me work on any other recording of the podcast.
Man, I am an actor.
Okay.
And when you try to limit my performance by trying to make me hew to what actually happened, it harms my ability to be an artist.
All right. Yes, and?
Yes.
Then I farted.
No, that's a bad example of yes anding. It's not like you to limit my genius. And I'm hurt. I feel like I should tell you the truth, which is that you've hurt my feelings by
calling out your lies.
Yes, yeah. Isn't that always the truth, though, when people lie? Like, they try to turn towards something where it's like, man, why did you hurt me by calling attention to the fact that I just lied?
Have I ever told you the weirdest moment like that I ever had in my life?
No.
Where I was sitting on my porch, my back porch,
yeah,
which is, I had a shared courtyard with my back door neighbor. We were all renters.
Uh-huh.
And my landlord was over, like, doing the lawn. And he said to my back door neighbor, did you rip out all the flowers in the back? And he was like, the weeds? And my landlord was like, no, there's a bunch of flowers. And he was like, there were some weeds back there I pulled up. And the guy was like, there were flowers that were planted from the wildflowers that were thrown at my wedding. Wildflower seeds that were thrown at my wedding. And then the guy who pulled up the flowers said, well, now you're making me feel bad. And I was like, I'm going to go inside.
Why are you making me feel bad? But there's some
I understand.
Yeah, there's legitimacy to it. He is making you feel bad.
Yeah. And also, like, I would not have said that. Because, like, one, that's not, like, you don't live there anymore, buddy. That used to be your house, but it's not anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not your house anymore.
Yeah. Well, I would say, like, if I had thrown the wildflower seeds from my wedding, I would have said, oh, that's a real bummer. Those seeds are from my, I might have, because I might, like, when you're in that space of anger and resentment, it's hard not to express it.
Yeah, I guess.
But I also might have been like, well, now you're making me feel bad about pulling up those weeds.
Yeah. And, like, we had a different definition of what a flower is.
And that's a big, deep thing.
Uh-huh.
Like, what is a weed?
Yeah.
It's a category. And like every other category, it's the theme of Dear Hank and John. There is not a one-to-one relationship between categories and language and reality.
Yeah, some people think something's a weed. Some people think it's not a weed.
That's so true. Yeah. And it's true not just of plants.
This guy, I did disagree with him on almost everything. So I was wont to side with my landlord because he had said several really objectionable things to me in the past.
Yeah.
I'm going to give John an example. We're going to cut it out.
Yeah, the story Hank just told me made me somewhat less sympathetic to the neighbor and more sympathetic to the landlord. I have, my loyalty has shifted.
But look, that was a separate incident.
Yeah, but my loyalty has shifted. So Hank, I'm going to pull us back to the question, but I'm going to point out that the tangent we just went on is a great example of how easy
it's
so easy to get distracted and to move away from the question at hand, which is how do I not get distracted?
Mm-hmm.
Do you see that squirrel?
There's a bird there too.
Oh yeah. That's a little, you know what that is? That's what that bird is called? That's a chickadee.
That wasn't a chickadee.
That was a chickadee. 100%.
Should I yes and you're wrong being wrong about a bird?
Chickadee-dee-dee. I heard it singing.
But that wasn't a chickadee.
It was.
It was not. It was like at least twice as big as a chickadee.
Well.
And it did not have a chickadee cap.
Maybe you've got your little.
It had a crest, which chickadees don't have.
Maybe you've got your weird little miniature chickadees in Montana that you think are the only chickadees on Earth.
You've got the big boys here.
I'll tell you for a fact, that's just a big, big old chickadee.
They call it a biggity.
Biggity-dee-dee.
He's a chonker.
How do you not get distracted?
Do you know how I do it?
How do you do it?
I say to myself, if I don't do this right now,
mm-hmm.
it will not get done. And then I make that decision.
Yeah.
And sometimes I make the decision, this will not get done.
Right.
And it will happen at a later time when I am reintroduced to it, probably by someone who I'm letting down.
Yeah. I mean, my basic strategy is to try to do what's in front of me.
Yeah.
But it's really hard.
Yeah, because what's in front of you can change very rapidly.
Yes.
Especially if you open your phone.
I feel like, well, I mean, my way of dealing with that is to really try to minimize the number of pickups associated with my phone. Mm-hmm. But I am sympathetic to the listener's question in the sense that, like, if you need to look at your phone to figure out what time this appointment is, then you're on your phone.
Oh,
and
man.
Once you've picked it up, it's hard to put it down.
I cannot do one thing. And I can't, like, I almost never pick up my phone to do something and do it.
Right.
Because before I get to the thing.
Or I'll do it, but then I'll be like, well, while I'm here, I wonder if it's my turn in Scramble.
Yeah. I don't know if you have the voice person that you can talk to.
Siri?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the question asker. Because I don't know if they do.
Yeah.
And it might not be Siri. It might be Mr. Roboto, the Android mascot.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
I made that up.
Oh, okay. I was just guessing.
But in that case, I can often make a reminder because you don't actually have to open your phone.
Right.
I just squeeze the button. And
right.
Then I'm like, remind me to take my medicine in 2 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so hard, though. Like, the other thing I try to do is that
if I don't, like, unlock it and like, so if I don't open my phone right now, what's going to come up? A text message chain, which is nice. But oftentimes it's Twitter, and in which case, I'm gone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I don't have Twitter on my phone, thankfully.
I love Twitter.
Oh, he's literally doing it. Like
I just wanted to see if I got if people have been talking about me, John.
Oh God. Okay, stop. Seriously. It's almost
people are sharing mushrooms.
Oh my God. You know what it's like, Hank?
What?
I'll be honest with you. It's a little bit like watching somebody
Don't say it.
It's uncomfortable. It was uncomfortable to see you say, but if I open Twitter, it's all over. And then it was all over. Like, you checked out. I could, like, the energy in the room changed to a Twitter energy.
Yeah.
That was a weird thing to witness. I feel like.
That's how it works, man.
I
entered the metaverse. I was surfing the web.
That was the most freaked out I've been about technology in a couple years. And I've like just, I read The Age of Surveillance Capitalism. Like I've.
That was me surfing.
Oof.
You saw my neurons go.
I did.
It's a different set of neurons involved.
I saw your energy change. And then when I saw your energy change, I felt the urge to pick up my phone.
Now we're talking about it.
Which is weird.
Mm-hmm.
I reached for my phone.
Yeah, you did.
Oh God!
Look, it gets much easier to deal with when you let go of the idea that we are in control. Like I am in control sometimes.
I don't know that it gets easier to deal with because I don't respectfully. I don't know that you're doing a better job of dealing with it than I am.
I don't mean doing a better job of being an internet person.
Yeah.
I mean doing being less stressed out about it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I want
to
be...
How I learned to stop worrying.
And love the bomb. I want to worry about it. I don't want to just give in. I think that's the improper response to be like, well, what are you going to do?
Jack Dorsey is in control of my life.
Time to cede my consciousness to the
Jack.
Internet. I would like to try to stay concerned. I feel like that's the last great hope I have.
All right.
Do you see all the dead ladybugs on the ground, by the way?
Yeah, there's a bunch of them.
Yeah, so do you see the little vacuum cleaner in the corner?
If you want to see more dead ladybugs.
The only reason I have that little dustbuster is to pick up dead ladybugs before, I often write in this little...
shed?
Tiny cold shed.
Uh-huh. And. Chilly.
And sometimes I'll just be writing and I'll be like, I cannot stand the dead ladybugs anymore. And then I'll clean them up. But man, for some reason, this is the central Indiana capital of ladybugs.
Particularly dead ones?
No. I see live ones all the time. That's how they die, Hank. First they live. In fact, isn't that the definition of...
this is how to die.
Isn't that the definition of something that is dead? Doesn't it have to have once lived?
You often call Mars a cold, dead rock, so if that's the case, great news.
It did. It was once alive. I'm convinced of that.
All right.
Yeah.
But is the moon a cold, dead rock?
Ever since humans landed there?
We brought life? Put some bacteria on that boy?
I bet we dropped a couple bacteria on that thing.
Oh, man. There's bags of poop up there.
There's bags of poop up there?
There's bags of poop up there.
Oh, then we're good. Yeah, it's a cold, dead rock.
Where do you think they leave the poop?
It used to just be a cold rock, but now it's a cold, dead rock.
Yeah.
Is the moon cold?
It's halvesies.
It's sometimes real hot, sometimes real cold.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've had relationships like that.
You know, the fact that we laugh at our own jokes so much, it's really how comedy works best.
Yes, that's... You always see the pro stand-up comics doing that.
Just buckled in half. I really think that one was a good one. I don't know if you thought it was funny, but I did.
Yeah, it's always the great stand-up comics have to use their own laughter to remind the audience that it was a joke.
See?
Okay,
someone's laughing.
This next question, we have no idea how to not get distracted. This next question comes from, this is the theme of today's episode.
It's harder.
We don't know.
It's harder.
We don't know. Patrick writes, hey, John and Hank, if I want my remains after I die to be preserved and eventually fossilized, where would be the best place to put them? Ideally not dead yet. All the best, Patrick.
Svalbard.
Really?
Yeah, places like that. Dry, cold places.
What about boggy places, like a nice bog?
If you could get into a peat bog, then that definitely works.
Yeah.
But like you got to get in the right part of the deoxygenated part of the peat bog.
Sure.
So you could get injected down in there. You need some kind of,
yeah.
Be great if there was like one of those things they have at the bank that goes,
oh yeah.
And it sucks up your like deposit slip, but like for dead bodies and just like shoots them into peat bogs.
Yeah. And then would the idea be to be fossilized so that later people could look at you and learn about humans of the 21st century, or would the idea be to be fossilized so that you become oil? Because that's my dream.
You want
to
be oil?
I would like one day to provide 32 miles of travel to one minivan.
I don't know if they could get that much out of you.
You got to have a dream, Hank.
Now I'm curious.
Come on. Yeah. Because we would have to wait like several million years, right? It would be a while.
Yeah.
We're using like dinosaur trees now.
I'm just wondering how many calories are in a gallon of gas.
Great question. And I'm sure one that Google knows the answer to.
So there are about 30,000 calories in a gallon of gasoline.
Okay. So.
And I think you probably got 30,000 calories in you.
I'd like to think I do. After that Thanksgiving dinner.
How many calories in a person?
Thanks for doing that on my Wi-Fi network. Great. FBI's going to love that.
Yeah. You got like 4 gallons of gas in you.
Great. All right.
You could get that minivan 100 miles or so.
Awesome. Great. What was the question?
I don't remember. But I think that's a fascinating stat.
All right, Hank, this question comes from Grace. He writes, Dear John and Hank,
was the question?
It doesn't matter. I'm almost 18 and I'm coming into young adulthood and I'm finding that growing up means spending more and more time alone. I have my license now, so I tend to get around on my own rather than with my mom and dad, and I find it quite lonely. How can I get used to doing things on my own that I used to do with company? DFTBA Grace. Grace, at first it's hard, but like so many other things, eventually you learn to really, really love it. Like, I'll give you an example. When I used to feel really anxious when I would go out to dinner by myself, you know, I would be like, what are people thinking?
Yeah.
But then I would bring a book and I would be like, oh my God, I can't believe I got this great meal prepared for me and I didn't have to talk to anybody.
I did that the other day. I went out to lunch by myself to like a place with a waiter.
Oh, wow.
For the first time in my life.
Yeah. And?
It was a bit much.
It was too much for you.
I was still a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Now, there were four other people in the restaurant, and they were all alone.
Yeah, that
helps.
So
that kind of helped.
Yeah.
But two of them were sitting at the bar and, like, talking to the, mm-hmm. the waitress slash mm-hmm. bartender. And so, like, that felt like, you know, that's the situation you're in. But, you know, I did it and it was delicious and mm-hmm. I love lunch. It's maybe my favorite thing.
Yeah. No, my favorite thing is family.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
My second favorite thing is dinner, mm-hmm. then lunch.
There are so many nuthatches out there, John, and none of them are chickadees.
Well,
there's a bunch of them.
I'll make a sort of broad observation to you, Hank, which yeah. is that every single nuthatch you're seeing is a chickadee.
Yeah, it's a chickadee walking upside down up the trunk of a tree, pecking
that,
it.
Have you
met a chickadee, John? It might be.
They are different birds.
It might be.
They're evidently different.
It's really far away.
And the only reason that you think it's a nuthatch is because you have tiny little Montana chickadees because there is nothing for them to eat. So they are like, they're like hummingbird sized because how could they survive? Whereas here we are in a beautiful hardwood forest and the chickadees can become fat and happy and huge, nuthatch sized. Also, many of the things you're identifying as a nuthatch are, in fact, falling leaves. I don't want to criticize your bird watching.
That's not what
But you've said there are
happening.
So many nuthatches.
There
and what there actually
bunch,
are
there aren't,
falling leaves.
There aren't a bunch right
okay.
now. They all went away.
All right. Anyway, it reminds me that today's podcast is brought to you by Indiana's Chickadees. Indiana's Chickadees. The chonkiest chickadees this side of Mississippi.
This podcast is also brought to you by our grandfather, who is grateful for his health. What he has of it.
Today's podcast is also brought to you by the stand-up comedians who laugh at their own jokes for so long to remind you that you should laugh at them. The stand-up comedians who laugh at their own jokes. Now see, that's
a
Robin.
Now I know what that one is.
Okay.
And this podcast is also brought to you by Career Opportunities. It sent John Hughes to the woods.
It turned out to be the opposite of a career opportunity. Yeah. Hank, we have a Project Ross message to read from AJ and Victoria to Dear Baby. Oh, this is a great Project Ross message, Hank. I want you to prepare to tear up a little bit.
Oh, no.
Dear Baby, welcome to the world.
Oh.
In all its beautiful shades of gray, in all its nuance and complexity. We can't wait to see you grow, to help you explore your curiosity, and to teach you to hope and love. We want to show you a world where mothers and babies like you are safe and healthy no matter where they are born, and because we are human, we selfishly hope you learn to love science and art like us. No matter who you are, we love you. We have no doubt you won't forget to be awesome. Love your parents.
Oh, gosh.
And that's so beautiful.
That's a really good one.
And so beautiful. Thank you for sharing that with us. Welcome to the world,
baby
AJ and Victoria. That's what I'm calling the baby.
AJ and Victoria?
Junior. So we all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but one thing you don't want to compromise on is your health. When it comes to your health, there should be no compromising. So don't go back to that one doctor who uses your appointment to catch up on the latest headlines or their family group chat or the crossword puzzle just because they're available right now or take your slightly sketchy insurance. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. You can search by location, availability, and insurance. So literally no compromises here because with ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. So go to ZocDoc.com/DearHank and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/DearHank. ZocDoc.com/DearHank.
This episode of Dear Hank and John is brought to you by Blue Land. The inside of your toilet is gross, and that's why you shouldn't let anyone in your household drink out of it, including your dogs, please. They let them close the thing, let them drink out of the bowl. The toilet is where the poop goes. There is an easy way to clean your toilet, though. Blue Land's sustainable toilet cleaner tablet. Just drop it in, watch it fizz, brush it up, and then flush. It's super easy, and the great thing about Blue Land is they are figuring out how to do all this stuff without any plastic at all. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and for the planet, and with the same powerful clean that you're used to. It uses no single-use plastics in any component, from bottles, tablets, to wrappers, and even to shipping. The tablet packaging, by the way, is fully compostable. Blue Land products are effective and affordable. The toilet tablets are proven to work on a range of toilet stains, including rust, mineral deposits, lime scale, and hard water. And look, when it comes to me, I don't really care that much about bacteria in the toilet, because again, that's where the poop goes. That's where it's supposed to be dirty in there. But it is nice to have something to help you with those mineral deposits, which we have in abundance in Montana. You can get even more savings by buying refills in bulk or setting up a subscription. Their subscriptions are customizable and convenient, so you never run out of your most used products. We have been a Blue Land household for like 3 years now. It's super convenient, super good. Like it a lot. The products look nice. They're easy to use. And again, they do not require single-use plastics or shipping a bunch of water around, because it's like the stuff that's going to be in the water, you can just dissolve it in water yourself instead of having the companies ship water from place to place. Why are we doing this? Never do I think to myself, oh, this is less effective than other cleaning products. It's just not. It's effective, it's easy, and it's affordable. Blue Land has a special offer right now for our listeners. You can get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/dearhank. You don't want to miss out, everybody. blueland.com/dearhank for 15% off. That's blueland.com/dearhank to get 15% off.
All right, hey, we have another question from Nicole, and since I've become really interested in astrophysics, I wanted to ask this question because I think I might know the answer to it, but only might.
Okay.
Nicole writes, "Dear John and Hank, how do we know that the universe is expanding? How can it even expand if matter can't be created or destroyed? Mm. What is expanding? Also, what is causing it to expand? What the heck is expansion? And how is what we're expanding into just nothingness? Penny for your thoughts, or even maybe a... Nicole." Wow. Wow.
Got worth it at the end there.
That was solid gold.
I think, so
as far as what's causing it to expand, like there are a lot of questions in there.
Yes.
The most important one is that we know that it's expanding. How do we know that it's expanding? Because once we know that it's expanding, it's like that's basically what we know. And then we have a lot of like guesses about like why and how and you know what is causing it, and like dark energy, and we're confused. But we know that it's... Do you know why we know that it's expanding? Do you feel like you can articulate that?
Yes. There's been a sudden influx of birds into the tree.
FYI. Thinking about the universe.
The reason those
birds are expanding.
The reason we know the universe is expanding is because, well, we have measured it in several separate ways.
Yeah.
So we kind of like double, triple know it now. Mm-hmm. But the original reason we knew it was from cosmic background radiation, which is sort of the remnants of the Big Bang. And then since then, we have figured it out because the distance from the stars is getting greater at an accelerating rate. So we don't just know that the universe is expanding. We know that the rate of expansion is accelerating.
Yeah, we can look out into the universe and see that everything that's pretty far away from us is moving away from us.
Yes.
And it's moving away from us faster and faster. So the farther out we see, the farther it's
moving away from us. But that doesn't mean that matter is being created or destroyed. It means that everything in the universe that is made of matter is getting further away from everything else that is made of matter.
Right. So looking from here, it looks like everything's moving away from us. But if you look from somewhere else, it also looks like everything is moving away from that point.
Right.
And because everything is expanding, which is maybe a better way to talk about it. Then, like, the universe is expanding, and so what is expanding into? And let's get away from that. The first thing is that like astronomers look and they can see that everything is moving away from everything.
Right.
Even things that would appear to be moving together away from us, if you were there, they are moving away from each other.
Right. That does not mean, though, that matter is being created or destroyed.
Space is just getting bigger.
Yeah, and space is not matter.
No.
That is, I think, that's the essential thing that's underpinning the question that they're confused about. That, like, there is space. There's a lot of space that's made out of at least what appears to be nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just like it's just a field, you know. It's just like the and it's very weird. So like I have a very like conceptually very easy time understanding like a magnetic field where it's like you put two magnets together and they stick to each other. As it's very complicated.
Or they get repulsed.
Or they can push against each other.
Yeah,
yeah, and you can feel these things. It's very difficult to understand like sort of like all of the rest of the things.
Yeah,
it's just sort of perturbations of fields because like. Matter ends up being just a field.
Time is a way, like what time is deep down.
Time is the worst one.
Time is a measure of things getting further apart from each other. Kinda.
And getting less organized.
Time is things getting less organized and right now getting further apart.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... Time is really bad.
Time is super weird.
When you start to understand how time is actually functions, it's not satisfying, and it is
no. It gets a little warpy.
Yeah. Well, it's just the when you ask like the question like what time is it in another galaxy? Like there is no it. Their time is different. It's just a different time, and. It seems bad, man.
Well, I don't know that it seems bad. It seems very weird. The other thing to understand about astrophysics, and this is also something to understand about viruses and birds and basically everything, is that we know a lot more than we used to know. And in the case of astrophysics, we know a lot more than we did even 100 years ago. But we do not know almost everything. We do not know if there are other universes. We do not know what dark energy is. We do not know. We do not really know why the universe is expanding at an accelerating rate. We have great, great guesses, but we don't really know for certain. Mm-hmm. And we don't know... Like
we don't know why anything exists.
Yeah, we don't know the answer to the biggest question, which is why does anything exist? Like
at all?
We don't know the question. The answer to
in
the question
in a lot of different ways.
Right. We don't know any part of the answer to the question. Why are we here? That's what I've had to come around to. Mm-hmm. Like we don't know why. We sort of know why life gets more complex over time on Earth.
We understand. Life is chemical. Like, that is much easier to understand.
But we don't know why the atoms that are inside of our bodies exist.
No, not at all. In fact, we have good evidence that they shouldn't exist.
Or, on average, at least according to what I've read, it makes as much sense for there to be nothing as for there to be something.
Yeah. Well, it's that when the universe sort of came to be, I don't know that we know why there ended up being more matter than antimatter.
Yeah.
By a very small amount.
And why is it such a small percentage?
Yeah. The universe definitely exists.
I'm not sure that we're sure of that.
Okay. There are some people who argue that the universe doesn't. Something exists.
I see a chickadee.
Well, that I may disagree with. You may see a nuthatch that's just perched like a chickadee.
The sky to me appears to be blue.
Yeah, I think, therefore I am.
Hank, before we get to the all-important news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon, I want to read you this question from Brandon, who writes, "Dear John and Hank, in my 20 years of life, I've found that I am easily distracted by things."
You already did this one.
I know, that's why I thought that was so funny. Do you not think that's funny? We barely even made it one sentence into this question.
No, I skipped half of it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There's a dead ladybug right underneath me.
All right, Hank, here's a real question. M writes, "Dear John and Hank, the other day I was walking my dog. He's a Newfoundland, which is a relatively uncommon breed in my area."
Mm-hmm. They're big.
I guess M doesn't live in Newfoundland.
I don't know how common they are there.
People often stop me or roll down their car windows to ask me questions about him, but this person rolled down their front and backseat windows and said, "I'll give you $20,000 for that dog."
Wow.
I had no response then, and after a week or so of thinking about it, I still don't know how to respond.
No.
What should I say the next time someone offers to buy my dog for $20,000, not selling my Newfie, M?
You gotta just yell back. That is a violation of societal taboos.
Or just shout back, "I feel like you should donate that money to the Humane Society."
Or "you can get them for less."
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's what it boils down to. Like, there's a price on everything, but there's some things you don't ask the price of.
Yeah. Also, I don't think that you can shout from cars at people.
Not unless it's a really
close friend.
Or if you're trying to warn somebody about something that's like, okay. If you're like, "Hey, your tire's going down."
Yeah.
That you can do.
I did that recently. I was outside of a coffee shop having my coffee, and a person pulled up and one of their tires was flat. And I like went in front of them and I was like, "Hey." And they're like, "What?" And I was like, "Your back tire." And she was like, "Are you Hank Green?"
And you're like, "Yes."
Yes.
And your tire's flat. I also think that you can scream at a stranger from a car if they are wearing a hyper-specific t-shirt that you relate to. So let me give you an example. If somebody's wearing a Liverpool t-shirt,
I can't
scream at them.
Yeah.
But if somebody is wearing an AFC Wimbledon t-shirt in Indianapolis,
hyper-specific,
you can bet your bottom dollar I'm going to roll down my window and say, "Hey, I love your AFC Wimbledon t-shirt."
Well, how fast are you going?
I'm stopping the car in this situation. I've just met my new best friend.
No,
you know?
What would you say to a person who's wearing a Liverpool shirt? You like, "Go dogs."
You probably might say, "You'll never walk alone."
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you could yell that from a moving car. "You'll never walk alone." Especially if it's another 45-year-old man.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're in the same like level
if you're
with
this,
them.
The same about approximate time of life.
Yeah.
Of course, you can't yell at anyone who's like more than 10 years younger than you.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what their norms are.
Like 20 years older, because then it's like,
I think that might be okay.
Like a 60-year-old, I don't want to scare them.
I don't know. If a young person yells at me, as long as it's nice, I'm happy.
Uh-huh.
But if I, as an old person, because I don't know what their rules are.
That's right.
I don't know what
the norms are. Different.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a power thing.
I don't even know enough to know. I try to stay the heck out of the way of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Don't sell your dog.
Don't sell your dog. Don't yell at people from cars. I once was walking to work and somebody yelled at me, "Get a job!"
What a terrible person. What a miserable soul. Like,
yeah.
think about how bad their morning must have been.
I don't know. I just thought it was a lovely day.
Yeah.
I was so happy that I got to walk to work. Let's spend a little extra time with my thoughts.
Yeah. Goodness gracious.
And by thoughts, I mean McElroy Brothers.
Yeah. Yeah, you could probably barely hear them over the really high audio quality of the podcast that you listen to. Compared to this echo chamber. All right, Hank, the news from AFC Wimbledon. Let's get to it.
Uh-huh.
Highly dramatic AFC Wimbledon game on Tuesday against bottom of the league Crew Alexandria.
Uh-huh.
We went down 1-0, but AFC Wimbledon is genuinely much better this season when down 1-0 than when up 1-0.
Yeah.
So everybody agreed this is a great development. This is exactly what we needed, was to give up an early goal so that the boys can wake up, And sure enough, we did. We scored 3 goals in the first half to go 3-1 up. Mm-hmm. 2 goals from Ollie Palmer, 1 from Jack Rudoni. Ayub Assal was having a great game. Then, like, we should have gone up like 6-1. We had so many great opportunities. I thought Wimbledon looked really good, admittedly against the worst team in the league. But then we gave up a really stupid goal with like 5 minutes left to make it 3-2. And I found the last 5 minutes of that game just unbearable. But we won the game. And so now we have 20 points after 17 games and are in 18th place, which is not half bad. We also have a game in hand over most of the teams around us, which is great. So we won the game. That's the important thing. Mm-hmm. But there was high drama in the last minute. Ayub Assal was shown a straight red card for what appeared from my... I have to watch on my phone because I can't get it to work on my TV. Uh-huh. But what appeared from my phone, this is what happened. So the ball was kicked long. Ayub Assal definitely like slightly fouled this one player in trying to like head the ball because he's a smaller person. Yeah. He's only like 5'6". So he tried to head the ball and he didn't quite get there and he probably fouled the guy. But they both fell over. And then the guy got up and he was very mad and he was like screaming and he headbutted Ayub Assal. And Ayub Assal like went on the ground and was like, man, that guy just headbutted me. It really hurt. And then they gave Ayub Assal a red card. And I was like... I feel like this is definitely like, a mistake.
There's no way that this guy headbutted him unless there was a good reason.
And then after the game, Ayub Assal was given a 6-match suspension and for spitting on this guy. And everybody was like, I didn't see that. And then in a show of real class, the Crew Alexandria player came out after the game and was like, he didn't spit on me. And so the red card was rescinded. Oh. The 6-match ban is off. Ayub Assal will be back in action soon. And Wombles everywhere are hugely relieved.
Holy moly.
I know.
That's something else.
It was quite a drama. So we won the game, but we were like, oh boy, we won the game. But at what cost? And it turns out at no cost.
Because just a headbutt.
Yeah. Except that the other guy probably should have gotten a red card. But maybe. Whatever, that's fine. Yeah, I mean, I honestly want Crew Alexandria to win the rest of their games.
That'd be fine for us. Good conduct.
So there you go. That's the news from AFC Wimbledon. What's going on Mars? I haven't talked to you in like a month about the news from Mars.
Well, John, the news from Mars is officially going to turn over for a little while to the news from the James Webb Space Telescope, which we'll be able to do and will do observations of Mars. If all goes well, because Mars is also in space, and the web will be quite well positioned to do some good observations and good data from Mars. But I'll talk more maybe in the future about what that kind of thing will be. But at the moment, I just need to talk to you about what's up with Webb. So the JWST has gone to its launch location, and they are putting it. They had to put it on a barge. They had to get it there. It's very complicated. They got it there, and I don't know exactly what happened because it hasn't been told exactly what happened yet, but a clamp failed, and there was a, quote, vibration. And a vibration, look, it's a space telescope that's designed to be launched into space on a giant rocket, so it's going to experience vibrations. It's designed to experience vibrations. But there was a vibration that was, quote, felt throughout the building. And that, I'm sure that there was a collective, loss of breath in that moment. So you have to be very careful with these things, and there is concern about the vibration, but they have done a number of tests. They postponed the launch because of the vibration.
Is this like an earthquake?
No, this is like a clamp failed and the telescope shifted and then basically knocked. But it was caught before falling.
Okay.
By another clamp.
Okay.
So it shifted and fell.
Okay.
Now that is a chickadee.
I think that was a downy woodpecker.
That was not a downy woodpecker.
I know. I was just trying to be funny. I was thinking I could try to like convince you, but then I was like, I'm gonna back off. okay. So there was is it going to be okay?
Yeah. So they postponed the launch a little bit so that they could check things out.
Okay.
And look, I don't know how much you can check out once it's sort of all folded up and ready to be sent to space.
Yeah.
But they checked it out and everybody, they gave it sort of a clean bill of health.
Okay.
Clamped it back up and it's on schedule to launch now on December 22nd. Which is quite soon, John.
Yeah, it's a huge deal. For those of you who don't know, the James Webb Space Telescope will revolutionize our ability to look at space.
Oh, I mean, it's like the Hubble, but like 4 or 8 or 16 times bigger or something. It is particularly very good at looking at like infrared wavelengths of light. Mm-hmm. And that will allow us to see much deeper into the universe than we ever have before, but also close-up stuff, maybe do like direct observations of exoplanets, like stuff that we really have never even imagined. But it's a super complicated telescope, and it is unlike Hubble, which you could fix. You can't fix the web. It's going to be out there, and it will not... it's going to be very far away.
Yeah.
From us. So we can't go fix it. So if something goes wrong, I have a friend who was working on software for the JWST in 1997.
Wow.
I think was when he was working on it.
Wow.
So that was like early like planning stages, but
yeah,
it's it takes a long time to design these things.
Yeah. So it's exciting, but also a little terrifying.
Let's talk about like worried about Ayuba Sol.
I know.
Talk about worried about those last 5 minutes. Ooh, the last 5 minutes of the web.
Yeah. Yeah. And you don't have 45 other games to save it.
Yeah.
You got to get it right on the first try.
That's right.
Well, Hank, thank you for potting with me. Thanks to everybody for listening. We'll be back next week with probably another reunion episode.
Yeah, it might sound a lot like this one.
It might sound a little bit better if we could just get the rest of the people out of the house. Send everybody on a quick trip. But I kind of like the idea, Hank, of us finding a way to birdwatch next time, too.
That's nice.
It's because it's a nice little vibe. Mm-hmm. I think we should start a podcast called Birdwatching with Hank and John, where Hank and John just debate whether it's a nuthatch.
Because we're definitely the experts.
We'd call the podcast, Is It a Nuthatch? ? And we would never do any research.
Is that a nuthatch?
Works for Joe Rogan.
Look, it's up. No.
Yes. Put that in, Tuna. You heard me.
This podcast is edited by Joseph Tuna Medish. It's produced by Rosianna Hals-Rojas. Our communications coordinator is Julia Bloom. Our editorial assistant is Deboki Chakravarti. The music you're hearing now and at the beginning of the podcast is by the great Gunnarola. And as they say in our hometown,
don't forget to be awesome.